She's a member of the James Beard Foundation's Who's Who of Food and Beverage in America. She's got a Lifetime Achievement Award from Bon Appetit, but even more important on her resume, she'll be joining us this morning on Foodie and the Beast.
I'm sure it's the highlight.
Lucky girl.
Highlight of her career. And later in the show, Pearl Dive, you know it as Jeff Black's monster hit on 14th Street. It has its Boil on the Bayou event. It's coming up soon. And we've got the executive chef Colleen Conrad in to give us all the info, along with the group's fishmonger, MJ Gimbar, and general manager, Ty Zolman. And they have brought in so much food and so many mud bugs. We may need some of you to come in studio to help us with
all
that. We've
got to find another name than mud bugs. I'm sorry.
I like mud bugs. All right. I think it's fun. Okay, now, nestled among the majestic mountains bordering the Shenandoah National Park is Ducard Vineyards. Now, this is a boutique Virginia winery that produces a limited quantity of very high-quality wines. We're very lucky today because Scott Eliff, did I say it correctly? Okay, great, is in with us. He brought a variety of his wines, and we're going to talk in studio. Scott, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks.
So give us a little history on you and your vineyard.
Well, it's probably kind of a hobby gone wild. I planted vines out there on country property that we had 14 years ago. Mm-hmm. Didn't really know what I was doing at all, but had kind of a epiphany that would look nice out my back patio of a weekend house.
Okay, so you just had a weekend house, and you were like, I think I'll grow some wine.
Totally learned along the way.
You must have had a weekend house with some acres.
It was some acres, yeah. Okay. Acres that turned it out to be very good for vineyard, as it turned out. But knew nothing and learned a lot. It's been 14 years and quite a ride.
Well, so how did you educate yourself? I mean, you didn't just pass through those 14 years and figure it out on your own. You must have talked to people, read something, brought in people to help you.
And made a lot of mistakes, too. Our industry was not really very advanced back then. There weren't a lot of people to talk to. So you'd kind of knock on everybody's door until it looked like they were kind of done with you. And you'd take whatever tidbits you could away. We've experimented a lot. We've changed a lot of what we do in terms of growing the grapes, the various technical aspects, and making the wine and everything. So it's...
But
onward and upward every year.
You're Virginia's first solar-powered vineyard, which is very cool and very interesting. What made you decide to do that?
Well, when you build a place, you want to do it according to your values and your interests and everything. If you can, you only get one shot at it, and I'm a pretty green kind of guy. So I tried to do everything as environmentally responsible.
It's not easy
as
being green, is it?
I know.
I think somebody said that.
Did he?
Before you.
Yes.
I think that term has been coined.
Smaller and greener than me, but...
Right.
So it's kind of has a delicious irony because, you know, we use the sun to ripen our grapes. So it's nice that we were able to use the sun to power our operation as well.
That's fantastic. All right. So you poured us something first this morning. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
We did. It's our newly released rosé, 2014. It was released over Valentine's Day. It's French style rosé. And this is becoming really back in popularity. This is not your grandmother's sweet Matus. Pink wine. This is a dry French
rosé. That's what we drank in college to be cultured.
Exactly, out of those funky
That's
bottles.
That's what he drank in college to be cultured.
Although everybody called it Mateus, because who knew?
Let's
be clear, that was when he was in college. Not a lot of us in studio were in college. I don't even know what that is.
It's so in now that even Brad Pitt has a winery in France, and they released a rosé. So on the radio, I can be at least as good a winemaker and as good looking as Brad Pitt.
Absolutely,
I suppose.
That's the beauty of radio.
Radio.
Better.
So, what should we be looking for while we're sipping this?
This is a very light strawberry and tart cherry flavors. Very nice as an aperitif in France. It's kind of your first glass of wine at whatever hour, including Sunday morning.
It's a good brunch starter. It tastes great.
Sure, brunch by itself. We released it on Valentine's Day, where we have a Sunday brunch out there, and that was the release of it. Mm. All of our wines are very limited volume. This is, I think we made 100 cases probably. It'll sell out by the middle of the summer or so.
Well, it's such a summer wine.
Exactly.
I mean, it's so refreshing.
All right, well,
while
we're sipping
on this,
let's go kosher. Paula Scheuer is with us. Again, she's the author of the best-selling The Kosher... I blew this one. Which is your bestseller, Paula? Help me, because
the Kosher Baker and the Holiday Kosher Baker.
Yeah, I don't know where the word got in there, but and she's going to be it again because the new Passover menu is killing it, right?
It's killing it.
All right, but you were always a baker. How did you become the Kosher Baker? What happened there?
Well, I have to feed my family something other than cake every night for dinner, at least sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So every night after meticulously measuring ingredients for dessert recipes, I would open up my fridge and I would cook whatever was there and turn that into a soup or a stew. And over time, I had a bunch of recipes in my head. So when my editor came to me from Sterling Publishing and said, would you write a food book? I was able to write this book in 5 months because all these recipes were in my head. I just had to measure out salad dressings,
soups, and stuff.
So you didn't
have to have tastings and all of that because
you already
knew what it tasted like.
Right, but I also have lots of recipe testers around the country who test out my recipes.
I want to volunteer.
So, but when you call it the new Passover menu, and you and I have talked about this briefly before, I think it's really hard for people who stick to tradition when they're doing their seders or their holiday table to bring in new dishes that isn't your grandmother's brisket, you know, from the 1800s, or, you know, that chicken with apricots that everybody does. You know, like, there are these dishes that people do. How do you slowly help people infuse new dishes into their traditional menus?
So you take something traditional and you make it healthier, easier, and more interesting. So, for example, I have matzo balls in the book that have cilantro and ginger, pepper, carrots, different flavors. I also took gefilte fish, which encases fresh salmon. So you have like a ring of gefilte fish around salmon. So it's still gefilte fish, but it looks so much more fresh, so much more healthy, and it's more interesting.
Now, is that something you were normally making? Because let's be honest, I mean, making gefilte fish is a real
pain in the tush. This is buying the frozen loaves.
Oh.
So it's so easy to put together.
You know, I was actually attacked by a gefilte fish at Ocean City in the water once. I don't tell people that much.
Yeah, I think people want something at their table that reminds them of their ancestors, but they really do want to eat the same food that everyone in the world is eating. Like the healthy, beautiful food they see on TV and in the magazines and online.
Well, so let's talk about some of the recipes you put in here. Like, walk us through the multi-courses. What are some of the ones that you're, like, planning on putting on your table this year?
So what's really nice about this book is that the recipes are super easy. And I know that because I've been doing demonstrations around the country, and I honestly don't have that much to teach people. Mm-hmm. As a baker, I was always teaching so many skills. But, for example, I have a quinoa here that after you've cooked the quinoa, which is so simple, you roast sweet potatoes.
But is quinoa Passover friendly?
It is now. It was approved for Passover in the last couple of years.
Ashkenazi?
Yeah.
Huh.
Why don't you explain what that means? I don't even know what that means.
Well, Ashkenazi Jews are people from Eastern Europe.
Right. I know what that
means. But Sephardic Jews, who are from North Africa and the Middle East, they eat beans and legumes and peanuts on Passover.
And rice. Right.
And so quinoa has been a great addition to the Passover pantry because it's like a rice substitute for those of us who don't eat rice.
Right.
It's basically like a seed. It's not considered a grain.
Okay, so you can eat it on Passover.
So you can eat it on Passover.
There's some other things. You've got a recipe for banana haroset.
I know. We were really kind of like,
what?
Yeah, that's one that people either love or hate. A friend of mine.
Your husband likes it. You're like, yes, it's a good dish.
Yeah,
okay.
Her husband, Andy.
Let's name you Andy.
So I had to make it in the fall to take a picture of it because we hadn't photographed it with the professional photographer because it actually isn't very pretty. So we made it in the fall and we ended up smearing it on challah on Shabbat and it was really good.
Smearing on challah.
But it has an interesting taste. It's something like traditional Ashkenazi haroset is apples and walnuts and wine, but adding the banana gives it a whole different flavor.
I guess, you know, like every year when we make haroset, I'm always like, this is so good. Why don't we make it like
it's a great
other
spread.
Times of the year? So would you do the banana spread throughout the year?
I might. I find the haroset is something you really look forward to. And I also have a Sephardic one that has dates and dried figs and apricots in the book as well if you want something a little bit different. So I like to give people different options for that. And I organize this book by menus, but people can mix and match the recipes.
Right.
It's just all really bright springtime food.
Well, let's talk about some of the main dishes because I think that sometimes everybody does like one traditional dish and then they're always looking for something unique and new to bring to the table.
Lamb stew.
Let's talk about lamb stew.
So talk about it.
So it was one of the very few recipes I got from somebody else, but I had to doctor it up a little bit. I put pear and mint into it. It's got apricots. Mm. It was the single most expensive recipe to develop for this cookbook because kosher lamb is so pricey, but it's so delicious.
Yes, I noticed you didn't bring any with you.
No, I did not bring any lamb.
But
I brought the quinoa and I brought the triple chocolate biscotti because I am, after all, a baker and I don't show up without dessert
anywhere.
You
probably should try these, don't
you?
So
you should try these. About the biscotti because it's Passover friendly, which means it's not made with flour.
Any flour. And people really think Passover desserts are terrible. They really get a bad rap.
They do.
But the gluten-free movement has basically taught us that we can make fabulous desserts on Passover.
Mm-hmm.
This one is made with ground nuts, melted bittersweet chocolate, cocoa, chocolate chips. And I do a lot of baking with ground hazelnuts and almonds for Passover.
Okay. It's like more almonds. Brownie than biscotti, which I like. Because biscotti is usually like chewing on cement.
Well, it depends how you bake it. You can bake it a second
time
longer.
Maybe he's just had really bad biscotti.
No, but they're
so I'll bring
hard.
You biscotti next time
like
as well.
Tech.
No, they don't have to be. And I put 15 new desserts in this book, even though I had so many in the last book. Mm-hmm. And I put a breakfast chapter here as well, which has waffles and granola and other things. I try to put things in this book that people don't expect.
Can we talk about the granola? Because,
yes.
Again, most people think granola is not kosher for Passover.
Right. And granola is the snack that I keep in my handbag for the entire 8 days of the holiday. So my second book had a granola with pieces of matzah farfel to substitute for the oats. In this book, I made it completely
gluten-free.
For people
who don't know what matzah farfel is, can you explain that?
Oh, matzah farfel is little pieces of matzah that you can buy already broken up, either whole wheat or regular. Or you can take a matzah, stick it in a bag, and just bang it with
something.
Say,
you just bring the box home and shake it up.
Shake
and
it up
you can do
like
you,
our children do when they're bringing it in.
Exactly. So you can do that too. And the granola in the book is all gluten-free, so mm-hmm. it has nuts and dried fruit and stuff like that.
Well, so that's you bring up something very interesting. So are all Passover recipes gluten-free?
No, because matzah bowls, for example, have matzah meal in them, which is made from matzah, which is from flour.
Right.
And people who are on nut-free diets, I have to give them recipes with matzah cake meal, which is a finely ground
right.
matzah. So I do have some recipes with it. I don't love the taste of that, so I've moved away from that on the whole.
Okay.
But I would tell people who are gluten-free that they would want to use this book all year round because it's almost entirely gluten-free.
That's amazing. All right, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about Seder plates. What,
we're
am I
actually
wrong?
A little early.
Oh, we have a minute.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I thought you gave me the
well,
sign.
Well, I wanted to talk about the photography in the book because
okay,
it's really
good.
Local photographer Michael Bennett Kress. He's done 3 books for me, and I think we get better and better with every book.
The photography is beautiful.
And a local food stylist, Lisa Tracowski, helped the styling, mm-hmm. and I used a local baking assistant and cooking assistant. So the photography is a lot of work. We did this over 3 days, so we had to make everything that you see here.
Wow.
And then my family had absolutely wonderful meals that week. It was better than the 80 desserts in my kitchen after photographing the holiday kosher baker.
Right, I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Poor Andy.
Poor Andy.
Yeah, the man who was always on a diet.
Well, let's talk about the Seder plate.
Yes.
Because it is sort of the centerpiece. Now we don't have
now
time.
Now you got to take, we'll come
okay.
back to Paul.
When we come back, then we're going to talk about the Seder plate because it is the centerpiece of the table. And I
absolutely.
Think people like to do something creative with it.
Yes.
To create a beautiful table. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We're getting ready for Passover. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is Mark Amtower. With lower margins, your limited marketing budget has to work harder than ever. LinkedIn is one of the most robust marketing platforms available. With over 350 million members worldwide, 110 million in the U.S., and 3.1 million members within 50 miles of this station, I guarantee your customers and prospects are here. Connect, influence, motivate, create leads. I can show you how. When you want to maximize the return on your LinkedIn presence, email me at mark@federaldirect.net.
The traditional light bulb, a groundbreaking invention in 1879. It's time we switch to longer-lasting Energy Star light bulbs. They're more efficient than the old bulbs, like a text message is more efficient than a carrier pigeon. And they cut down on our energy costs. Because in our own groundbreaking age, we deserve a light bulb that saves us some cash. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me.
Stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes, twice a day. I have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hey, everybody, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Our guest is Paula Scheuer. She's known as the Kosher Baker, but she's so much more.
She's got the new Passover menu, her beautiful new cookbook, which is out. And Paula, you are doing television all over the place this week. Tell us where we can see you.
So you can already go to my Facebook page because I was on Channel 9 2 weeks ago demonstrating my Seder plate salad, which has all the elements of a Seder plate and the Seder table in a salad. It's a great recipe. And then today I fly to L.A. to tape Home and Family on the Hallmark Channel, which will air on Tuesday morning.
Okay.
And that's a lot of fun. There's always soap opera stars I grew up with who are also on the show when I go. And then Tuesday I'll be at Good Day New York at Fox News in New York. So I go from one show to the next.
And are you doing cooking demos on all of them?
Yeah, I'll be doing demonstrations. I'm doing the gefilte fish on Home and Family, and I'm doing the Seder plate salad.
Tell us just quickly about the Seder plate salad, because I'm really interested in that. Because there's so much on a Seder plate.
Right. So the shank bone is roasted lamb. I have hard-boiled eggs. I have parsley, walnuts, and apples from the charoset. And the dressing has the bitter herbs, marar, and white horseradish, and sweet kosher wine.
Oh,
and it's like a niçoise, but with lamb. So it's just
very
a beautiful
cool.
recipe for a lunch to serve or even a light dinner during the 8-day holiday.
Okay, great. All right, tell us where we can buy the book.
So you can buy the book on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, in bookstores. Politics and Prose has lots of copies of the book. I spoke there last week, and they're great supporters of my work.
They're so great.
And always support independent bookstores if you can.
Did you expect it to take off the way it has?
I was hoping it did. I worked really, really hard on the marketing and promotional plan for this, but I'm just so happy people are embracing it. And it's really a book for all year round.
That's what I was just going to say. I mean, looking at the recipes, these are while there's a lot of Passover-friendly recipes, most of the stuff can be made all year
round.
This
is what I cook for my family all the time.
Okay, great. Thanks, Paula.
All right, we're going to go back and talk now to Scott Eliff, who is the proprietor of Ducard Winery. And Scott, one of the things I read in your materials is that aside from, you've got a solar-powered operation there, but you bill yourself as Virginia's greenest vineyard. So there must be a lot of composting and recycling. I mean, talk about some of the stuff you do, because it's not – there may be other vineyards doing it, but it's not things that we've heard talked about.
Mm-mm.
Right, right. Well, everybody talks about organic and then sustainability, and nobody's organic because we have too many pests and too difficult a weather in Virginia, so you kind of do the best you can to be
green
and sustainable.
So are they full of it? Are they using the word organic?
No, he's talking about Virginia wines.
Right, the word organic is a football? Or
no, organic is fine, but it's just an impossible standard for Virginia. We have heat and humidity, frost, all kinds of insects, very specialized insects, problems, and so forth. So we step back kind of half a step from there, and we do as soft and environmental kind of sustainable approach as we can.
And what does that include?
Well, for example, we have an insect that'll saw off the little new shoots when they come up in the spring with with a saw on the end of its nose. It's like a climbing cutworm.
Like that
it's a climbing cutworm. It lives on the ground. So how do we handle that? We keep the area under the vine clear so it's not a good environment for it.
Mm-hmm.
And we also spray some material that changes the pH in the environment. Now I'm going all technical on you.
Well, but
so it's not very hospitable for
how
it.
How many of these pests are native and how many of them have showed up on boats and crates and airliners and all of that?
Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of them show up on crates and airliners. Stink bugs that we all have around that showed up on pallets or something or other. They are. If they get into the wine, it's called stink bug taint in a very small concentration. You don't want that, trust me.
That sounds like a very expensive problem.
Yeah. And we actually we treat the grapes a little bit and kind of shake them off, in effect, before harvest to make sure we don't get them. But we're so small, we hand harvest everything. We know every grape and every cluster and kick them off if they happen to get in there.
What's your total acreage? Is it 7 acres?
And we have about 5 more that are kind of under development to match.
Now, how does that compare
growth
to, say, Torreira or one of the the other vineyards
or
in Virginia?
Barbersville.
We're a drop in the bucket.
Okay.
We're way smaller than just about everybody, but it's the size and scope that I like because we can get our arms around
manageable
it and do it to the level that we like.
Great. All right, so what do we got here?
We're pouring a signature Viognier. And Viognier, you can try your best pronunciation of it, all of us who aren't French.
Vigneoner?
That's pretty close. Keep working on it. It's technically Virginia's signature grape. It's something different. If we're going to be different than California, we can't just be another oaky, buttery Chardonnay.
Correct.
So it's very honeysuckle and peaches and wildflowers and very much sort of spring meadow, which is really what our place looks like when you get out there. Fabulous with seafood. Oysters is coming into season. We're doing an oyster fest at our place later in April.
Oh.
And crab and scallops, really nice.
What about
really
mud
nice
bugs?
Magic.
Can we go with mud bugs? Because we got those in studio.
I guess so.
We're going to have to give that a shot.
While we're sipping and enjoying your wine, since organic came up, Ariane Duggan is the CEO and co-founder of D'Artagnan, which is celebrating 30 years here in the D.C. marketplace. And they are the nation's top purveyor of all-natural and organic poultries and free-range meats and foie gras, charcuterie, wild mushrooms, and truffles. Ariane, are you there?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, and welcome to Foodie and the Beast. So let's
thank you. Thank you very much.
You are a much celebrated leader, almost founder of that whole organic, all natural movement. But talk about how you came up with the idea for the company and when you launched it, because I do know back then, organic, all natural, all of those things that we now prize and that are really working their way through the consumer marketplace were considered kind of hippie concepts. So how did it all happen?
Well, when we started the company, all we wanted was to provide, to grow source and then to provide to chefs, whether it's home chefs or chefs in restaurants, the best product possible taste-wise. And the best product possible taste-wise happens to be the product from an animal that was well-raised, that has been well-raised without stress, and that was eating natural stuff, and that was building muscles, being free-range. So that's how naturally we went in there. There was no conscious, let's do something organic as a marketing tool. It was simply, let's do something, let's search for excellence. And it brought us there naturally.
Well, let me ask you something. You mentioned the word stress. And, you know, Deepak Chopra has this whole line of thinking that when an animal experiences stress during life and when it is killed, that causes hormones to be released in the body that we then eat, and it ends up becoming human stress. Is that part of what your thinking was?
I don't know about that for sure. I know that there has been very detailed studies in France, notably, on stress of animals and how, indeed, some of that adrenaline, some of those hormones that are created by the stress actually affect the muscles of mm-hmm. the animal. And what I'm interested in is the muscles, because this is what you taste. And so when it is affected, when it is acidified by those hormones, then it doesn't, it's not as good, you know?
Well,
so, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt. Well, what I think is interesting is that, I mean, your company is known for supplying some of the best products around, but you brought in a lot of products years ago that were not readily available to the chefs and cooks alike here all across the country. How were you able to introduce them maybe to some chefs, and how were you able to bring in some of those products? Because a lot of them were just not available 30 years ago.
That's simply because no farmers were raising them. Mm-hmm. And in particular, I can think of different breeds of duck in particular, or different breeds and old heritage breeds of chicken, or guinea hens, or quail, rabbits, you know, things that are today are the staple, and in the rest of the world are staples, but here, I think after World War II, we kind of forgot about them. And we went into a factory farming mode to make sure that we could feed people an effective way and a cheap way. And in the way, we forgot a lot of the borderline and other, you know, very, very tasty meats from animals that would have been a little more difficult to raise. And so all we had to do was try to remember and to have the farmers remember those what their parents and grandparents were doing, and started doing it again. And then we asked them to be very, we gave them a very specific way of raising the animals.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning, it was pretty simple, is please put them free range, meaning as soon as the temperature and the weather allows, they have to be outside. In any case, whether they are inside or outside, they have to have plenty of space to roam around, to develop those muscles and to not develop that stress. and never ever give any medication, whether it's hormones or antibiotics or any other kind of medication. So we started with that, and then little by little we developed, as the market started developing, because the chefs, our first clients were pretty much exclusively the chefs of the good restaurants,
mm-hmm.
you know, the top restaurants of the nation, who wanted to show different ingredients and who wanted to show their creativity with different types of meat. And then little by little, it went down to the bistros, and the consumer started asking for it in retail stores, and we created our website, d'artagnan.com. And so little by little, the demand grew like that. And as the demand grows, so does the demand of a better and still better and better ingredients. You know, we're going up now. We, up until 3 years ago, we had an organic chicken,
mm-hmm.
That was free range. Then it became an organic chicken, free range and air chilled, which means that during the process, there is no water added. So the concentration of taste of the chicken is great. Then we added the notion of a heritage breed. So instead of 45 days old, that chicken is now 85 to 100 days old. You know, so little by little, as we feel the demand grows, we go up one notch.
Sort of curious, which do you think came first? Were your demands for the product and the quality of the product what created the product, or was it in cooperation with chefs looking for that kind of product?
I think we were very, very lucky. We came here in 1985. I mean, I arrived from France, and then at the beginning I had a partner who I bought back in 2005. But at the beginning, when we started our company, it was exactly in the same time than all those young chefs coming out of the professional schools,
mm-hmm.
The CIA just came about, FCI, French Culinary Institute, Peter Kempf, who's now ICE, Johnson & Wales, you know, and from all those schools were coming out young chefs who wanted to show their difference. They wanted to be creative. They wanted better ingredients. And so they pushed us, and we arrived all in the same time. Mm. You know, it was this generation. When we started, we had in New York, and we had, and that was 30 years ago, Charlie Palmer was at the River Cafe,
mm-hmm.
Patrick Clark at the Odeon. They were the classical French, André Soldner at Lutèce, you know, but Daniel arrived at Le Cirque, Jean-Louis Paladin in Washington, D.C., at the Watergate. And Jean-Louis helped us a lot. He's from my region of France. He was from Gascony, as mm-hmm. I am, and an old friend of my parents. So I knew him before we both arrived here, actually. And he really is the one who pushed a lot,
Ariane,
not only us on the meat, but other people, other ingredients.
Pardon me, I have to jump in because we have to take a commercial break. Can you hang on, and we'll talk to you right when we come back?
With pleasure.
Oh,
okay, thank you
so much. All right.
This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is Mark Amtower. With lower margins, your limited marketing budget has to work harder than ever. LinkedIn is one of the most robust marketing platforms available. With over 350 million members worldwide, 110 million in the U.S., and 3.1 million members within 50 miles of this station, I guarantee your customers and prospects are here. Connect, influence, motivate, create leads. I can show you how. When you want to maximize the return on your LinkedIn presence, email me at mark@federaldirect.net.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. With lower margins, your limited marketing budget has to work harder than ever. LinkedIn is one of the most robust marketing platforms available. With over 350 million members worldwide, 110 million in the U.S., and 3.1 million members within 50 miles of this station, I guarantee your customers and prospects are here. Connect, influence, motivate, create leads. I can show you how. When you want to maximize the return on your LinkedIn presence, email me at mark@federaldirect.net.
Hi, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to Ariane Daguin, who is the founder of D'Artagnan, one of the nation's premier provider of organic and range-free product to chefs and consumers alike.
Mm-hmm.
Ariane, question, because we only have about 2 minutes. You had a huge gala event here earlier in the month where you celebrated your tenure here in the marketplace. We'd love to hear about it. We weren't there.
Yeah. This year is our 30th anniversary. We have been working for 30 years at D'Artagnan to grow our network of farmers and hopefully our network of chefs, consumers too. And so I'm very, very proud of that. And so we are going around and celebrating it. We're going to culminate with a big party in New York in September. But we did this 2 weeks ago in Washington, D.C. at the Hamilton. You know that rest? You know
we do.
The Hamilton.
I used to work in the Garfinkel's building, so we know it very well.
All right. So Chef Anthony Lombardo did a video. We organized with him. It was a great gala dinner. We had a really, really grand time. We did it for No Kids Hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And so Anthony did the foie gras dish. And then Eric Brunner-Young from Toki Underground,
mm-hmm.
he did a beef tartare with our Wagyu beef. Mike Friedman from the Red Hen did a rigatoni al maialino with our porcelain, suckling pig. That was beautiful, and some black truffles. It was really, really good. And then Sam Kim from the restaurant 1789, he used our Rohan duck and took the breast, and he pan-seared it and put some black trumpets and duck confit and bitter green, a very, very complex dish. It was beautiful.
It sounds like it was a real bash. I wish we'd been there. And we're available for New York, by the way. You just let us know. Ariane, unfortunately, we have to move on. Please tell everybody how to find D'Artagnan, which, in case anybody needs a spelling, he was one of the three musketeers, or he was the fourth musketeer.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was, and he really existed. The website is www.dartagnan.com, and that's DARTAGNAN.com.
Okay, great.
Thank you so
Ariane,
much.
Thanks so much for joining us on Foodie and the Beast.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Our pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Scott. Let's go back to you and talk some more. I guess one of the things, when I saw that you only really are farming 7 acres of land, how did you know the land? I mean, did you know? Did you even think about whether or not that was your, what's the word in French? Terroir.
Terroir. You want to talk terroir.
Sounds like terror, which is how I describe marriage. But how did you know? I mean, it could have been like total, you know, flop.
Yeah, we got it tested, but ultimately you just take a leap of faith on it. You want actually fairly crummy soil. We're right up against the Shenandoah National Park.
Not
it's crummy, wonderfully
bad.
Crummy. Crummy bad, yeah, actually.
Really?
Make those grapevines stress a little bit, and you'll see that in this Petit Verdot that we're pouring just
this
now.
This is delicious.
Well, let's talk about this.
Well, I got to tell you, it's fun to be here in the studio because we poured this wine, and everybody's high-fiving and thumb-upping and everything. It's
two people just passed out.
Yeah. It happens. It happens. It's a Petit Verdot. This is the best wine we've ever done. It's 2010, which is a drought year, which is great for vines. And Petit Verdot is a Bordeaux French variety.
You mean you walk around going, oh, boy, there's a drought?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
When those corn farmers were on TV all the time in wheat a few years ago, how bad it was for them, it was fabulous
for
us.
You're like, the hell with them.
We had to just be quiet about it, but it allowed us to make really great, very concentrated wine, dark purple color, very aromatic. And if you had brought that lamb roast with you, this would have been a perfect
Yeah, thanks a lot, Paula.
Well, actually, I think this would go nice with the biscotti.
We'll have something next
with
the biscotti, actually.
But I think the sweetness of the biscotti would go really nice. I like red wine and chocolate. I think it goes well together. I'm good. Thank you.
I like everything in chocolate. That's just me.
But so how did you decide which grapes you were going to plant?
You have to have ones that match in your terroir, but you also have to have ones that will make a good wine, and also maybe something that's a little different. Petit Verdot was not very widely planted. There are only about 10 of us that do a varietal Petit Verdot. In France, it's used as a blending grape in the big Chateau wines.
Right.
But here it does just fabulously. And we represented the state when we had a profile of the state against the world, and this was the Petit Verdot that was used to show off the state, basically.
Really?
So,
nice.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to sip. We're going to talk to you more a little bit later in the show. Right now, we've got the crew in from Pearl Dive. They're awake, which is amazing considering how late they were up last night. But Executive Chef Colleen Conrad, the Black Restaurant Group Fishmonger, MJ Gimbar. Fishmonger is such a great word. I just imagine, you know, old Irish, hey, laddies, you know. Ty Zolman, who's the GM, are in. Colleen, let's start with you. Give a little overview of the vast empire that is now the Black's Restaurant Group, and then what you guys do at Pearl Dive.
I mean, we have lots of oysters all of the time, but this summer, or this spring at least, we're focusing on crawfish, and it's a lot of fun to just pick them and eat them.
What do you call
them,
mud crickets? What are they
called? Mud bugs.
Mud bugs. Same
mud
thing.
Bugs, crawdads.
Same damn thing to me.
Crayfish.
First of all, how long have you been there now?
I've been with the company for like 2 years. I've been back at Pearl Dive for 6 months as the executive chef.
As the executive chef. So how did you sort of make this menu your own? What were some of the things that you put on the menu that you were looking to add to it?
Back in the fall, I decided, you know, after I spent some time back there, I switched up the menu a little bit. We changed a few of the things. We still have the whole black bass, but changed the plating on it. And, you know, we added a couple salads and some gnocchi, some butternut squash gnocchi.
You feminized the menu a little bit.
A little bit. I mean, a little feminine touch.
Well, what about for a real man?
No. I mean, there was plenty of
we
real
had plenty
men
for real
there.
Men.
The fried,
fried chicken. Yeah, spicy gumbo and etouffee.
But let me talk to MJ a little because, you know, I know you about your experience up in New York in the seafood market up there. And
selling fish in New York for a while.
Right. So you guys have the reputation, really, you've got the best of the best, the freshest of the fresh down here.
We search around for it,
Well, how do you make that happen? I mean, and leaving the competition with the next best of the best.
Well, Jeff was smart enough to hire me, you know. So.
Okay, we can end
the show. Over.
Good job,
Jeff.
It's just become the MJ Gimbar show.
Well, what I mean by that is it's a dedicated fishmonger.
Yes, what do you mean by that?
It's a dedicated fishmonger to look after everyone's seafood needs, and that means that it's my job, sole purpose, is to provide, to find the best product available.
Yeah, but what's it like, I mean, when your sleeves are rolled up and you're talking to, are you talking to distributors, are you talking to
I'm
fishermen?
Talking to fishermen, I'm talking to farmers, like oyster farmers or
just
fish
like
farmers.
The conversation we were just having with the woman from D'Artagnan. I mean, I would assume your relationships are what are key. I mean, that's what she, in essence, was saying, that she has these relationships with their farmers. She has told them what the kind of product she is looking for. Are you having those same kind of conversations with fishermen?
Every day.
Okay.
And the seafood world is ever-changing. Every day, it's almost like every hour, there's some issue or problem that you have to negotiate. So I'm always, you know, looking out for tomorrow. You know, next week.
But how do you stay on top of it? Because as we know, we've had several people, you know, seafood experts on the show before who talk about, you know, certification and, you know, you go to Whole Foods and it's yellow, red, green.
Right.
I mean, how do you stay on top of that? Because it's
reading.
Nature. It's ever changing.
Right. It's a lot of reading. It's keeping updated with NOAA, their website, they're always putting out the latest reports, following the latest fish reports, and talking to the fishermen, what's happening on the water. They're right there on the water, mm-hmm. so they can tell you what's happening. Like, this is what we call today. This is, we're seeing fish get smaller, this disappearing, so you have to be on top of it. And it really is a 24/7 job where I'm up at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm up until midnight, 1 o'clock, talking to chefs, and mm-hmm. back up again each morning, talking with the guys at the docks, what came in, what's coming in.
Well, this is a question for all three of you. So how do you take that expertise with the product that you're bringing in? And then how does it get translated to the customer? Because when a customer comes in and they're not familiar with certain fish, or, you know, they want their piece of salmon or whatever it is that they think they should be eating, and it's either not sustainable at the moment or it's not readily available, how do you go about working with MJ Colleen? How do you guys work together to create a dish based on the product he's bringing in? And then Ty, as the GM, how do you then deliver that to the client? You know, it's, I mean, you guys all have to work together for the business to be successful. So how does that all, how does that all work?
Well, I provide them with information, and then Ty and Colleen have a lot to do with training the actual staff, the, mm-hmm. the people that are on the floor dealing with the guests.
I mean, jumping right to the guest, I think that there's certainly a lot of questions, and it gives us a good amount of confidence to say, hey, you know, we have MJ out there doing, you know, these connections and research for us. So we can step in front of the guests and say, you know, we're very confident about where our product comes from and what we're dealing with. But we've seen several different questions come through. A lot of it is about farmed fish, and a lot of it is about, you know, when we're getting certain kinds of oysters. And, you know, we had a point in time there where our oyster list was predominantly West Coast because of all of the frost that we've been getting here. You know, everything's frozen over. The oyster farmers and fishermen cannot get out and get the product to us.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to have real dialogue with the guests about, you know, what,
when an oyster
what's available.
Shivers, do they just go in? So do you
so
work
cold.
The floor?
It
do you
is
go
radio.
Out and talk
Nobody
to customers?
Can see that.
I do. When I'm around in the market, especially during the holidays, I'll be around busier times. You'll mm-hmm. see me on the floor providing information.
With
and
those hours,
I'm always available.
With those hours, I would see you on the floor, literally.
And Colleen, do you find it not difficult, but as you're working with sort of newer product, you know, as we try to educate people on more fish to eat, how do you take maybe some fish that people don't hear of and translate that into a dish?
A lot of times people are really kind of anti-new things, and they just want to go back to what they always know. You
right.
know. But MJ's really good about, you know, getting in there and getting the information out to us and telling us what's around. And, you know, all of the time I'm like, well, I don't know what that is. And he has the information out there for us and the product. And the more I know about it, the more I can teach the staff about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they can tell the guests about it. And that's what I think pushes the new product is the information that you have. And MG's really good about putting it out
Education.
There. Education.
Yeah. Okay, great. All right, when we come back, we are going to talk about Boil on the Bayou. And I think we should eat some mud bugs in studio. I would really love to get the kosher baker to eat some mud bugs, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I was wondering how that dynamic would
not
work.
Not a Seinfeld episode.
Trafe.
Okay.
Pork and right. chill fish.
This is David and Nikki Nellis. We'll be back in just a sec.
Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. At 7, I shower. Every day I wake up.
For those caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community to help us better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. With lower margins, your limited marketing budget has to work harder than ever. LinkedIn is one of the most robust marketing platforms available. With over 350 million members worldwide, 110 million in the U.S., and 3.1 million members within 50 miles of this station, I guarantee your customers and prospects are here. Connect, influence, motivate, create leads. I can show you how. When you want to maximize the return on your LinkedIn presence, email me at mark@federaldirect.net.
Green light. Hey, girl. School zone. I'm getting hungry. Car changing lanes. You want to meet me for pizza? Stop sign. Intersection clear. Yeah, street. Pizza sounds good. Ball in street? Girl in street!
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text. Stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. With lower margins, your limited marketing budget has to work harder than ever. LinkedIn is one of the most robust marketing platforms available. With over 350 million members worldwide, 110 million in the U.S., and 3.1 million members within 50 miles of this station, I guarantee your customers and prospects are here. Connect, influence, motivate, create leads. I can show you how. When you want to maximize the return on your LinkedIn presence, email me at mark@federaldirect.net.
Hey, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're chowing down on some great food brought to us by the folks from Pearl Dive, Colleen Conrad, MJ Gimbar, and Ty Zolman. Guys, big event on April 19th, Boil on the Bayou. Hit it. Come on.
We're so excited about this one. For the past few years, since we've opened, we've been doing crawfish boils in the spring. So this year, we decided to do a little bit different. We're going to do both floors. So it's going to be Pearl Dive Oyster Palace and Blackjack. Both floors are open. It's kind of a house party feel. And it's from noon to 5, and we're just going to have at it. It's going to be you don't have to set up a time to come in. You don't have to make a reservation for that. You can come whenever you'd like, stay as long as the event. And it's going to be kind of a house party. So we'll have live music. We'll be doing the whole roasted pig that we do on the patio to
in the China box.
Yeah. Yep. and we're going to be grilling oysters on top because in the China box, you put the pig inside and you put the coals on top. Mm. So we're going to put a grate on top of that and grill it off oysters. So it'll be a good party both inside and out.
Paula's just shaking her head over there.
Okay, so MJ, how do you eat mud bugs correctly? So, like, you get a hole
with your mouth.
Stop.
First of all, you got to use your hands for sure. So you want to break off that head. Mm-hmm. First, separate the tail from the head.
Okay.
And you want to suck the head. You got to suck the head.
You got to suck the head.
That's what I say.
That sounds like we're talking about a different radio show altogether. But go ahead.
It's a lot of flavor. That's where a lot of the flavor is right there.
Okay.
And then you want to, that you're done there. That's it with the head.
Okay.
Cast that aside. Now you're on to the tail. You break off the first shell there on the end of the tail. Not the tail end, but the head from the head. Yeah. Break off that first.
I'm going to do it wrong.
You just break off that little guy. And then once you break off that first one, you can just kind of push the tail out.
Yep.
Just push from the bottom.
Okay.
Squeeze it together between your thumb and four fingers.
This
tail should slide right out.
A lot of work, man.
Okay, but it's yummy.
You get faster as you go, and the more beer you drink, the better off you are.
The better off you
guys. Can't you find crawdaddies as you commit suicide and, you know, separate?
Well, you want them live. You want them there. You want them live and kicking when they get to us. They need to be alive right before.
Where do you get crawdaddies? Where are they from?
These are coming from Crowley in Lafayette, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. These are going to be farm-raised. Jensen is the company we get them from. We talked to a guy down there.
Okay.
We have a relationship with. And usually they get better as the season gets going. And it really gets pumping out in April, mid-April, May, which we have the crawfish boil on the 19th.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be hitting them right at prime season. And then towards June, they tend to fade away.
Fade away.
All right, I got one for you. You're so smart. Why are they called crawdaddies? Come on.
Crawl daddies?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe
MJ Gimbar doesn't know something.
Do you know? Are you asking a question that you
no
don't actually know
bloody
the answer
idea
to?
So that's I can just BS you. They're called crawl daddies because it's another way of saying crawfish.
Because they have children. Right, I understand.
But they're like little lobsters, right?
They are. They're like little lobsters. They're
related?
Really, really tasty. Really, really.
But they're not from the ocean, right?
They're not. They're freshwater. They actually farm raise them in rice fields. So and the rice is actually used for human consumption also, but the rice will grow and the crawfish will grow and eat the rice.
I seem to remember crawdaddies in streams when I went to camp in Pennsylvania. Is that
possible? Yeah, but it's gonna take you a long time to collect 200 pounds worth to get the
crawfish. I know, but I mean they're...
But are crayfish the same thing?
Yes.
They are the same thing.
Crawfish, crayfish. It's just a colloquial word for crawfish is in Louisiana is crawdaddy. You call it crawdaddy, crawfish in Louisiana, and above the Mason-Dixon, it's cray.
Okay.
All right, so we got about a minute with you guys. Let's talk bocce upstairs, because my question for you is are you guys, because I don't know of another bocce court in a bar in D.C.
There are others.
There are?
Yeah.
Are people, are you finding, like, Americans now learning how to play bocce and coming to bocce tournaments and all that?
It's really fun and funny at the same time, but watching people trying to figure out the rules of the game. We have the rules posted up on the wall in the bocce ball court.
The rules are you got to drink wine and go, hey, oh.
Exactly. Ooh. So early in the night, you see people studying and trying to get it right. And later in the night, you see people just going
throwing
for
balls.
It.
Hammered.
Which is awesome.
Right. And lastly, for the boil on the bayou. So when you come in, all the food that you've brought in today is what's going to be there?
Yeah, so we're going to be offering, you mentioned drinking beer to get better at picking the crawfish. So we're going to be offering two different tickets. So we have a $55 ticket that will get you all you can eat, and you can order whatever you'd like from the bars. They will be open both on both floors. And then we have a $90 all you can eat and drink. So the all you can drink portion of it becomes a Beta Amber Ale, wines by the glass, and then hurricanes that we'll be doing on both floors. So the food that you get is a lot. We do grilled oysters.
Yeah, Let me just say, for the record, I'm in studio. There's a lot of food.
Yeah, we don't skimp on this. So we'll be doing grilled oysters. We'll be doing our Addie's dinner rolls, which are the awesome rolls that you get in the bread baskets for dinner. But we'll be stuffing them with pork to make them even better. We have crawfish. Obviously, with the corn and potatoes in the boil style, with Slap Your Mama seasoning on there.
This looks like
dessert at the end.
Our son is getting married weekend, but I think we're going to pass and come to Europe.
Sounds good.
Where can people buy tickets?
So you can buy tickets online if you go to pearldivedc.com. Under the events page, we have a quick link for you. And we do have a group rate going. If you do 8 or more tickets, it's a 10% discount. So that's always great to gather up all your friends and come on in.
And again, it's
from 12 to 5.
All right, you can stay whenever you want. All right. Back to Scott.
Scott, what did you pour here?
Well, saving the best for last, maybe.
This is a port.
Oof.
It's really delicious. An after dinner, very dark.
Any port in a storm.
But slightly sweet red wine. And you still have some of that chocolate biscotti. This would be the time to break that out to a really good.
It's really good.
I think they snarfed it down already.
No. It's right here in front of me.
You liked that line, didn't you, MJ? Thank you. Okay. You're welcome.
We make this with Norton, which is Virginia's native grape.
Right.
And grape brandy spirits, and we age it in Maker's Mark whiskey barrels. And age it a couple of years.
Is that something classic you do with a Norton grape? I think it's the best use of the Norton grape.
It is really fabulous. Yeah.
But I don't feel like I've seen this before. It's really interesting. I've only heard of the Norton bomb site.
There's only a handful of us that do it. We do what we like to do and try to do the best.
Quick question. How do you take all this to market? Do you have help from the Virginia Wine Board, or are you just out there saying, try this. This is my wine. I can get you some.
Little bit of each, but you got to adapt it to your own circumstances and what you want to do, and apply your own passion to it.
How do people get your wine? Where do we get your wine?
We really aren't distributed at all. We'll ship in Virginia and D.C., but pretty much our approach is you come out to our winery and sit on our back patio and look at the mountains and sip these wines and have the local food with it.
Well, you're near Madison, right? Etlin is near Madison, right?
About 90 minutes from the Beltway, and it's a world away, obviously.
But you guys have earthquakes out there.
Well, we shake things up a little bit.
We have earthquakes in California too. You still go for the wine.
All right, so you have no distribution in wine stores here in the district?
That's correct.
Okay,
but that's a goal or no?
No, that's on purpose. We're small. We want to have a real kind of high quality, almost sort of curated experience where you come out there. All our staff know all about the wines. We talk about it. Really make it something special as a getaway as opposed to just another stop along the road.
Are you looking for restaurants to carry some of your wine?
We've had a couple of restaurants in D.C., mostly just people I know of, and we'd like to expand on that.
I wonder if you could find it at one of Jeff's restaurants.
Not yet, but maybe after the show.
We got a little wine left here. Maybe we'll talk afterwards.
Okay.
So.
All right. That's right. Please tell everybody where they can find you and your wines, please.
Thank you. It's at DucardVineyards.com, and all the events we have are on the calendar page, including the Oyster Festival that same weekend that you guys have your festival, but it's on Saturday the 18th, and the Winapalooza, which is a big wine and music and craft festival in May, and all kinds of other things.
Is that local music? Is it bluegrass and that kind of thing?
A little bit of everything.
That sounds like fun.
That sounds like fun.
Big fun.
Okay, great.
Yeah, all right. Did you give your web address?
No.
DucardVineyards.com.
D-U-C-A-R-D. All right.
Thank you so much.
Whoa. All right.
Good show.
You know what? Let's talk a little about what's coming up on next week's show.
Okay, well, next week's show, it is Easter next week, but we are playing last week's show, which we weren't able to air, and it was such an amazing show. So we had Deborah Shore of Share Our Strength in studio, not just talking about the Taste of the Nation event, but really what Share Our Strength does. And she is a really inspiring lady and the organization, of course, about how they're really going about to feed the hungry children in our nation. We also talked with Nikolai, who came in.
Yeah, Nikolai Konik.
Yeah, he's fabulous. Go ahead.
I was going to say, he brought in some folks from Yonkers, New York, Namias Distillery, and they're making machia, which is a traditional Moroccan liquor made out of fermented figs. And when I first heard that, I was like, yeah, okay, that ain't going to taste good.
It was delicious.
It was unbelievable. And they mixed it. They actually mixed it with lemonade. And it was killer. So it was unbelievably good. So, and yep. That's a brand new distillery. It's just